Warrant and Proper Function, Alvin Plantinga, Oxford University Press, 1993, 256 pages. A brief book summary from Books at a Glance. About the author. Alvin Plantinga is one of the most influential philosophers of the past half century. He is John A. O'Brien Professor of Philosophy at Notre Dame. His work has focused on the knowledge and existence of God, as well as the broad field of epistemology, the theory of knowledge. His most important work is arguably his trilogy on warrant, which altogether argue for the rationality or warrant of Christian belief. Introduction. Warrant and Proper Function is the sequel to Warrant, the Current Debate. In the latter, Plantinga critiques current epistemologies, varieties of deontological internalist theories, as well as reliabilism. In this work, Plantinga lays out his positive theory of warrant by first defining it, then exploring the design plan, and lastly by evaluating metaphysical naturalism by comparison to proper functionalism. Table of Contents. Chapter 1. Warrant, a First Approximation. Chapter 2. Warrant, Objections and Refinements. Chapter 3. Exploring the Design Plan, Myself and My Past. Chapter 4. Other Persons and Testimony. Chapter 5. Perception. Chapter 6. A Priori Knowledge. Chapter 7. Induction. Chapter 8. Epistemic Probability, Some Current Views. Chapter 9. Epistemic Conditional Probability, The Sober Truth. Chapter 10. Coherence, Foundations and Evidence. Chapter 11. Naturalism versus Proper Function. Chapter 12. Is Naturalism Irrational? Summary. Chapter 1. Warrant, a First Approximation. Plantinga's initial definition of warrant is thus. In the paradigm cases of warrant, a belief B has warrant for S if and only if that belief is produced in S by his epistemic faculties working properly in an appropriate environment. And if both B and B star have warrant for S, B has more warrant than B star for S if S believes B more firmly than B star. And knowledge requires both true belief and a certain degree of warrant, a degree that may vary from context to context, so that knowledge may display a certain indexical character. Page 9. This proper function means to function properly according to the design plan, not to function normally in a statistical sense. He stresses that the cognitive faculties must be aimed at truth, not something else like survival or pleasure. 16. Chapter 2. Warrant, Objections and Refinements. In Chapter 2, Plantinga gets more detailed about the design plan. He first distinguishes between the max plan and the design plan. The design plan is a set of triples, circumstance, response, and purpose or function. 22. Cognitive faculties mature and evolve in accord with the design plan. The max plan, on the other hand, describes how a thing will function in any present structure and organization. 23. Thus, if something malfunctions, it may still be part of the max plan, but not the design plan. Second, the design may have unintended byproducts. 24 and 25. Third, he describes functional multiplicity, which states that the same behavior or response may serve different purposes, which can even entail acquiring a new design plan. 25. Fourth, he distinguishes between the purpose of a thing and its design, how to achieve that purpose. 26 and 27. Fifth, he discusses Gettier cases, which he notes typically involve the malfunction of the cognitive environment. 35. The real value of Gettier cases is that they show that internal justification is insufficient for warrant. 36. Lastly, he notes that it is not clear whether one knows that one has warrant for one's grounded beliefs, which would be necessary for internalism. 44. The next 8 chapters explore the design plan. Chapter 3. Exploring the Design Plan, Myself and My Past. Chapter 3 looks at the ego and memory. In contrast to Descartes, he does not require that one's cognitive faculties guarantee beliefs about oneself and one's past, but what matters is that one holds these beliefs with sufficient confidence and whether these beliefs are produced in me by cognitive faculties successfully aimed at truth and functioning properly in an appropriate environment. 55. Memory does not require evidence for warrant, because memory has a distinct phenomenology that causes memories to appear with a certain pastness and sensuous imagery that is different from empirical observation in the present. 60. These memories, if formed according to proper functionality, are properly basic. 64. Chapter 4. Other persons and testimony. Chapter 4 looks at other persons and testimony. He argues with Reed that it is part of our design plan, as evidenced by our disposition as children, to accept the testimony of others, even if we can learn to filter testimony through maturation. 67. He then demonstrates that testimony is the basis of a large portion of our beliefs. Even science, which is supposedly based on inductive knowledge drawn from experimentation, is based on testimony, for scientists build on the testimony of other scientists and their theories and purported test results. 77. So testimony should not be disparaged in light of science or scientific investigation. If we are dependent upon testimony for most of our knowledge, and we have the disposition from birth to accept testimony, then testimony may be considered properly basic. To clarify this notion, Plantinga does note that a belief has only as much warrant, max, as the warrant had for the testifier. 83. He must be properly functioning, and his testimony must be aimed at truth. And lastly, an eyewitness report has more warrant than a report from someone who was told what happened. 88. Chapter 5. Perception. Chapter 5 argues that perception is properly basic. He sets up classical foundationalism against his own view, where the former says perception only has warrant if it is accepted on the basis of beliefs about one's experience and if those beliefs support it. 95. He argues that our perceptual beliefs do not work this way. We do not learn to believe we are appeared to readily based on the evidence that we are appeared to readily. Rather, that connection is built in. 99. However, there is a maturation factor, where one must learn to recognize perceptual distortions, such as a straight stick in water or mirages. 99-101. Chapter 6. A priori knowledge. Chapter 6 argues that a priori knowledge is properly basic. This knowledge is not independent of experience, but requires the experience necessary to grasp or understand the propositions. 103-104. It involves a sensuous experience, which evokes that experience necessary to grasp the proposition, as well as a feeling of rightness or correctness. 104. A priori beliefs are such that a properly functioning human being cannot grasp such a proposition without believing it. 109. He argues tradition has erred by believing a priori knowledge is infallible and that it does not come in degrees. 109. He then argues against propositions being concrete, 117-120, and suggests the casual relation between propositions and knower exists by virtue of our casual relation to God, 121. Chapter 7, Induction. Chapter 7 argues that induction may be properly basic. First, he surveys the old riddle of induction, which is that, according to Hume, nothing justifies us in drawing inferences inductively, but that life cannot be guided without them. 125. But Plantinga suggests induction is not irrational, and thus is justifiable. 126. Induction may have a warrant if that is how a properly functioning human being makes inferences, which seems to be the case. 127. The new riddle of induction involves problems with making two specific or exclusive characteristics for a sample class, which necessarily excludes particulars that would invalidate the induction. But Plantinga argues that no properly functioning human being makes, Goodmanian, projects or inferences of this sort. 133-134. Chapter 8. Epistemic Probability. Some Current Views. Chapter 8 looks at epistemic probability, which is non-deductive and non-statistical. Statistical probability is the kind of probability we are used to, based on observed and recorded behavior. Epistemic probability is the probability of a proposition, A being true when entailed by another proposition, B. This sort of probability is only true for propositions, not events or other sorts of things, and is normative. Theories of epistemic probability suggest that if a belief is epistemically probable, then it has warrant. The three main theories of epistemic probability are Bayesianism, the logical theory of probability, and Kabergian probability. Bayesian epistemic probability says that one's personal probability for a proposition A is the degree to which one believes A, or the level of confidence one invests in it, or the degree of credence one affords it. This is problematic because it relativizes warrant, and because one can know propositions that are improbable but actually know personally that they are true, which is contradictory. The logical theory of probability says that there is a definite and logically necessary relationship of probability between any pair of propositions, and epistemic probability must be grafted into this logical probability. But no one has yet been able to distinguish between logical and epistemic probability, nor is it likely anyone will be able to. Cabergian probability holds that statistical probability is the only kind of epistemic probability. But his view leads to cases in which one may have warrant for belief B, and the epistemic probability between the two can be high. But A has little warrant for an individual, so this view is not helpful for warrant either. Chapter 9. Epistemic Conditional Probability, The Sober Truth. Chapter 9 then lays out Plantinga's own view of epistemic warrant. There is the objective and normative component to epistemic probability. If something is epistemically probable, then two things are true. The proposition is objectively probable with respect to the evidence. This is the objective component. And it is reasonable to believe in the proposition. This is the normative component, given the evidence that we do have available. The normative component of the epistemic conditional probability of A on B is the interval containing the degrees of belief a rational person could have in A, provided she believed B and was aware that she believed B, considered the evidential bearing of B on A, had no other sources of warrant for B or its denial, and had no defeater for the warrant, if any, accruing to A or its denial by virtue of being thus believed on the basis of B. Chapter 10. Coherence, Foundations, and Evidence. Chapter 10 argues, first, that coherentism is a brand of foundationalism, with coherence as the source of warrant, 177 through 182. Classical foundationalism, on the other hand, is self-referentially incoherent, 182 and 183. What he calls Reedian foundationalism includes basic beliefs that he has been arguing for, perception, memory, etc., 183 through 185. Reedian foundationalism involves evidence, but it is not necessarily propositional evidence as the classical foundationalists require. For example, memory beliefs have no propositional evidence, but the evidence is some sort of sensuous imagery, 188. Properly functioning human beings also do not form empirical beliefs based on evidence, but rather on the immediate sensory experience itself. There is also a felt inclination toward believing the proposition in question, or its necessity, in the case of memory and a priori beliefs, 191. Thus, when there is warrant, there is evidence, but the type of evidence is different from what the classical foundationalist requires, nor is the evidence alone sufficient for warrant without proper function, 193. Chapter 11, Naturalism versus Proper Function. Chapter 11 explains proper function as a naturalistic epistemology. Something is functioning properly if it is working according to the intention of the designer, whether that be God or evolution. Pollock talks about functional generalizations, which are how organisms work when they function properly, but there are problems with this view, 199 through 201. Millikan says having proper function is to have been designed to, or to have been supposed to, impersonal, perform a certain function, 201. This involves something functioning properly if it has a function that attributes to survival that its ancestors also had, which explains the existence of the organism, but this theory fails as well, 201 through 204. Bigelow and Pargetter talk about dispositions towards survival-enhancing propensities, but Plantinga shows problems with this view as well, 204 through 211. Having defeated these theories of naturalist views of proper function, to which anyone who believes in science or biology holds, he suggests this is a powerful argument against naturalism. There must be a designer who gave proper function to organisms, for straight naturalism cannot give us proper function, 214. He concludes that the only way to be a naturalist in epistemology is to be a supernaturalist in ontology, 215. Chapter 12. Is Naturalism Irrational? In Chapter 12, Plantinga argues that naturalism is irrational. Evolution says the purpose of an organism, or part of it, is for survival. There is no evidence that the purpose of our cognitive systems is to serve us with true beliefs or that they do furnish mostly true beliefs. 218. Darwin and Churchland proposed the probability of our cognitive systems being reliable is low, while Quinn and Popper think the probability is high. 219 and 220. Quinn believes the kind of animals with systems that produce mostly true beliefs will survive, but Stephen Stick shows that some animals survive through random genetic drift, and Plantinga shows that cognitive systems not aimed at truth may help an organism survive. 220 through 222. Thus, Stick shows that it is perfectly possible both that we and our cognitive faculties have evolved in the ways approved by current evolutionary theory, and that those cognitive faculties are not reliable. 222. Plantinga then looks at five different possibilities for how behavior and cognitive abilities have contributed toward survival. These possibilities are mutually exclusive and jointly exhaustive, 227, and result in a probability anywhere from very low to just above one-half, 227 and 228. Then, if our cognitive faculties are considered reliable, we have a probabilistic argument against naturalism, and thus for theism, 228. One might then consider agnosticism to the probability of cognitive reliability in a naturalistic theory to be the right approach. But in that case, the person would also have to be agnostic toward his belief in naturalism and evolution, which becomes an undercutting defeater for it. 231. He concludes, one who accepts N and E and is apprised of the present argument has a defeater for N and E, a defeater that cannot be defeated by an ultimately undefeated defeater. And isn't it irrational to accept a belief for which you know you have an ultimately undefeated defeater? 235. The theist, on the other hand, may trust the reliability of his cognitive faculties, since they are created by God. 237. Copyright 2015, Books at a Glance. Books at a Glance book summaries are available by subscription only, and except for brief quotes, may not be reproduced, in whole or in part, without express written permission.